probable, et il y a toujours un risque de tornade avec un orage.
Sunday, June 19th. For more information, visit muralfestival.com.
All right. Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, also known as Chuchage and Munayang, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah De A, recording from home on Thursday, June 16th, 2022. On tonight's show, At the Fringe, Ira Cooper on searching for validation as Mr. Coffeehead.
We're alive and existing. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty awesome that we get this opportunity to be here. Like art and cycling, it's really about focusing on not how far you can get on the road, not how done you can get with the painting, but actually painting itself, the very road itself.
Oliver Kumsatira writes about youth violence in his new solo show, Psycho 6 at the Mai.
What makes it that one good kid growing up in a neighborhood, maybe a little bit impoverished, what makes it that one good kid can get intertwined and do something as bad, as lethal, as walking around with a firearm and being pressured or pressed to go out and shoot at someone?
Back to the Fringe, Naomi Moon of Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers from the Great Unknown.
I think that's the motivation for me, and is to connect the audience with their imagination in an embodied sense. So the imagination that lives through sound and color, that's why I want it to be a poem-like experience. Poems are often blending the sensations and their description of life.
And how the folks at Table d'Hôte Theatre got the idea to hold a theater show on a boat.
A number of years ago, I had seen some videos of a very cool project that happened in Germany, whereby these artists recruited villagers along a 30-kilometer train ride and created short snippets that audience members could see as the train zipped by. So all of these scenes were like 5 seconds. And I thought, why can't I try something like that on the canal?
You have a few more days to catch shows at the St. Ambroise Montreal Fringe Festival. I've seen a lot of storytelling shows so far. I saw and loved Gem Rolls, A Walk in Winter, A La France's Is This Yours, as well as The Disney Delusion. Also really loved The Murder Next Door by Rosemary Riley, and Would Virginia Woolf Contemplate on Suicide If She Were Filipino by Riley Palenka. And to help you check off your Fringe goals, the Quebec Drama Federation is hosting a Fringe Frenzy Bingo. Document your participation in classic Fringe MTL activities to get your bingo line, and those who submit will be entered into a draw for some really sweet prizes from some of the sponsors of the Fringe, including a 3-show pass, as well as gift certificates to La Banquise and the Saint-Ambroise Terrasse. The draw is going to be held Saturday at 1 at Fringe Park. You can go to quebecdrama.org/bingo for more information. The Fringe Festival continues until Sunday. You can get your tickets at 514-849-FEST and montrealfringe.ca. And now, on with the show. Maybe if you've been around at the Fringe, you might have spotted Ira Cooper, a slim man with clown-like makeup, donning a long ponytail, a helmet, and cycling gear, chatting with anyone who will stop. He is one of the artists who likes to promote his work by circulating around the plateau in character and costume. It's a great way to build buzz, and I think it's very charming. His new show is a clown-like exploration of life, backpacking, chasing dreams, and sometimes giving up on them. The Vancouver-based artist is in Montreal for the Fringe Festival. I spoke with Ira earlier this week about Mr. Coffeehead. Welcome, Ira, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
How does it feel to be in Montreal coming in from Vancouver right now?
It's a beautiful city. I'm like going to switch up my Duolingo from Spanish to French so I can move here. That's my goal in my head.
I love it. I love it. So So is Mr. Coffeehead Clown, would you put yourself into that category? Because you also say it's kind of like slapstick. I'm wondering where we are in the clown spectrum.
Clown spectrum. Well, as somebody who knows people who have studied Buffon and like legit clown, I was very hesitant to call myself a clown because I know the work and time that and the specificity that goes into that work. I would say, yeah, in the classical sense of Buster Keaton, Fatty Arbuckle, Charlie Chaplin, that sort of a clown. Even I would say Shakespeare's clowns, where they are kind of like the asides and the kind of running dialogue, the movie commentary, and they do it with fun and energy and honesty. There's a deep, I think, honesty and reverence to clowns. So, yeah, sure, I'm a clown.
You mentioned some references there, like Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin. Did I catch that as well? Yeah. Who were your heroes?
Buster Keaton. Buster Keaton is like, for this show, I would say Keaton. Keaton was the master of gags and would create, not only he was a surrealist without knowing he was a surrealist. He was, you know, he was creating dreamscapes within reality without really drawing attention to it. I mean, Samuel Beckett asked him to be in a film called Film, and Keaton didn't really understand the whole premise of it because it was surrealist and he was very confused by it all. And so I love that like kind of, he just kind of created things that were just amazing and big and gargantuan in reality bending. He was also an inventor. So he would not just do the slapstick and the pratfalls, which inspired Jackie Chan, by the way, but also he would invent devices so he could, I don't know, push the boundaries of not as not only a performer, but as a director and a cinematographer. So that's why I really love him in terms of creation and innovation and being into his 70s and still creating even then with a Canadian film actually called The Railroader, or I was mixed this up. There's also a documentary on it called Buster Keaton Rides Again, where he rides across Canada on a little railroad cart that takes him across all the provinces. And in fact, I have reference in the show to that very movie because it blew me away at that age that he was still thinking and being creative.
Yeah, after kind of having a bit of like a personal crisis at some point in his life, and he took a break from performing, yeah. At some point, TV starts becoming, you know, there's a TV in everyone's home, and he had become an astute student of television and how television works, and was like always watching TV, but taking notes and thinking critically about it, like a performer to the very stretch of his career from the youngest age to the very end. That is the voice of Ira Cooper, who is presenting Mr. Coffeehead at the Fringe. Welcome to Montreal, coming in from Vancouver. So we've talked a little bit about your influences. Now I want to get into your character. Do you call him Mr.? Is that the character, Mr. Coffeehead, or am I reading too much into the title?
Well, if you've been around Montreal over the Fringe Festival, you'll see me around in full costume garb saying one of the title tracks. Songs of the show, and it's Mr. Coffeehead. What does it mean? And the main character's name is not Mr. Coffeehead. It's Stanzik Perchik Warshawski VII, Perchik being a reference to Fiddler on the Roof, and Warshawski being a reference to my background, my Warsaw Jewish background. And Stanzik was a famous Polish clown from, I believe, the 13th or 14th century. And there's a beautiful painting of him as the elites are partying in the background. He's pensively sitting in a chair thinking because the Polish Empire was falling and the rich and elite were so ambiguous and unaware. And you've got this clown in deep thought. And that just blew me away, that image, that striking image of like social commentary within somebody who's just supposed to be kind of like the gesture, the entertainment.
Describe to me how you look, because I have seen you spotted around Saint Laurent at the Fringe Park. I love a performer who goes out in their character because it's such a great way to get people's attention and get them, you know, to the show. So what do you look like when you're out in public?
Heavy black eyeliner, like let's say the new Batman movie where he, when he takes off his makeup and there's just black around his eyes, and two rosy cheeks. And I also wear like kind of the, I don't know what it's called, but it's the kind of like Slavic, it's too cold outside, I need to still feel my ears kind of hat, with the droopy side pieces that go down and the fuzzy like top, the fuzzy piece on the top. And if I'm in full garb, I'm wearing like a Lycra bicycle jumper thing,
yeah,
a bibby. But I've decided recently that Stanzik can live outside of that costume and just requires the makeup. So you'll see me generally in what I'm wearing with that, the signature hat and the makeup.
When I've seen you out and about, Ira, with the face makeup, as you mentioned, some rouge and some black liner, a helmet, you've got your long hair and wearing like, it's like you're about to go, you look like a clown who's about to go on a bike ride, like in the countryside or zipping through Montreal. Like that was just my reflection when I've seen you. So tell me about more about Stanley and the ideas that you're exploring. There's a little bit about, you know, taking stock. Maybe not a quarter life, maybe not a middle life crisis, somewhere in between, figuring out where you are. Tell me about that.
Originally, I had another show to present at the Fringe, which was called Artisanal Intelligence. It was about a hipster AI customer service robot who gains sentience during a pitch to sell her as a product. And then she doesn't want to be sold as a product anymore. But COVID happened and Fringe went on hiatus. They contacted me earlier this year, I believe. And my actors, obviously there were new actors and we've been working on a VR show with the same characters, just didn't want to do the play anymore. So I wrote down Mr. Coffeehead and then had to write a show based on that. 38 years old right now. And have a lot of friends who just don't want to do art anymore. It's really tough to do art because I feel, in my humble opinion, and I think this is several of my friends' humble opinions, that value, what we value, you know, in the end of the day is still currency. If we're not monetized for what we're doing, then why are we doing what we're doing? And Mr. Coffeehead is kind of my ode, my love play towards process over product. The idea that rather than focusing on point B or any points for that matter, we're alive and existing. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty awesome that we get this opportunity to be here. Like art and cycling, it's really about focusing on not how far you can get on the road, not how done you can get with the painting, but actually painting itself. The very road itself. A play is live and changes each time. It's not like a movie. You could come see the Mr. Coffeehead all six nights if you wanted to. I'd love that. It would be seeing six nights of Mr. Coffeehead, and it changes and it lives and it flows. And that's why I've always loved the theater over film in many ways, because it's about process. So this is my show about giving up in my 30s and deciding not to, and deciding that I just had to reposition or kind of reimagine and to kind of fight back against the pressures that have been instilled in me, that have been passed down intergenerationally, that revolve around if it's paid for, if you're a professional, then your work matters, and then you are a success. Then you are validated. Where at the end of the day, I have to find validation in myself, and that we all have to find validation in ourselves. At the end of the day, when we wipe off all of our clown makeup and we take off our Lycra bike uniforms, it's just us.
That is the voice of Ira Cooper presenting Mr. Coffeehead at Misha Santa Cruz, part of the French Festival. More shows coming up this weekend. It's so meaningful. I kind of just got lost in the thread of what you were saying. What did it take for you to like look around? You're seeing your friends who are not so sure if art is what they want to do anymore. Actually, it sounds like they're pretty sure. But for you to keep going, even though you seems like you kind of want to hit pause.
Well, first I contacted one of my friends who's the director of the show, Aslam Hussein. And I was like, you're directing the show. And he was one of those friends who was like, art and me, you know, he was acting in England and he had an injury which stopped him from doing art. And I thought one of my big things about theater is collaboration. I love it. In fact, I find it very hard to write down that I'm the writer of any shows. The writing process for this show is very much like I write something and then we all tear it apart. And that's really what I am. I jazz on. I'm not like, I'm the writer and therefore nobody can write anything. People are writing pieces all over the place. I think that I could come up with something in 6 months and somebody can come up with something in 1 second that's better than my 6 months of work. So why wouldn't you want to include that? So I think that idea of collaboration got me jazzed about doing art again. And the idea of having fun again. It's been a lot of time also not wanting to go on stage because I'm a cisgendered white male taking up space on the stage. And for a long time, I was like, during this process of the past couple of years, like a bunch of other cisgendered white males had kind of like a reckoning, and justly so. We've been on stage for thousands and thousands of years taking up a lot of space. So there was a pendulum shift in me where I was like, I don't want to take up space on the stage. I don't want to like say something, oh, look at me, I'm the center, I've got problems. But that it doesn't negate that we all go through struggles. We are all struggling. And this I think this struggle particularly, which pushed me to do it, it felt like something universal. And it felt like I was looking around and seeing different artists that weren't white cisgendered males also struggling with this same kind of conundrum, this same kind of pressure, these same kind of constrictions that have been inundated into their lives.
So now that you're here and you're performing, have the doubts been erased? Are you feeling more at ease and comfortable with being in this position where you can create?
I think I'll always have a sense of imposter syndrome. I mean, there's just so many amazing performers here. I mean, Ala Franz and Jem Rolls. These are like people I've looked up to for years. Rita, who's a new performer that I've just met, who lives in Vancouver, who's doing the Leonard Cohen show. I'm still looking for validation, even though I wrote a show about like that you need to find self-validation. So yes and no, I'm feeling jazzed that people are liking this because this is my first solo show since theater school, I think 10, 11, 12 years ago. So basically my first solo show. I've been really scared to get on stage again. So in that sense, I'm feeling groovy, grand, and great.
What a way to end it. Thank you so much, Ira. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much for having me, and see you at the show, everyone.
That was Ira Cooper, the creator and performer of Mr. Coffeehead. He has 3 shows remaining this weekend at Misha Santa Cruz, Friday through Sunday at the Fringe Festival. Tickets at 514-849-FEST and montrealfringe.ca. You can follow Ira's work at spectheater.com. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Still to come this evening, poetic images and a boat cruise of a play. Stay tuned. Oliver Combes-Atira is a budding playwright who is not shying away from one of the most shocking developments in Montreal and other urban centers in Canada. It's the rise of violence among youth, and as well as the trafficking of guns. Oliver delves into his own life experience as a young Montrealer, backed up with very in-depth research into crime statistics in order to paint a comprehensive and sympathetic portrait of this issue. There's also dance, movement, and rap involved in his show. He is the writer and solo performer of Psycho 6 on now at the Mai until the 23rd of June. It's a Tease Redunia production directed by the talented Liz Valdez. I spoke with writer and performer Oliver Kumsatira earlier this week. Welcome, Oliver, to Upstage. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Tell me about the play that you set out to write.
Right. So I started writing it in 2012 as part of a solo development program. And we're asking you questions about, you know, stories that impacted you from childhood, from your teenage, and anything that affected you growing up or your family. So we started really in the seminal parts of your life, developing a character that would be the thread throughout you would build that solo, and then developing characters around that environment that you are familiar with. So I set out to kind of like disentangle parts of my earlier childhood and teen life where I saw a lot of crime happening around me in my neighborhood, at school, and I was trying to figure out what was going on with certain teenagers that get intertwined with the criminal life, youth gangs, all that underworld, and the same kids living in that neighborhood that got out of it pretty much unscathed. What was the different factors that were kind of pressuring teens to make those decisions along the way? Then it developed into a longer piece throughout the years. So since 2012, started working with Tease Redunia Theater in 2018 for their Fireworks program. It's a play development program. And we just worked on it with the dramaturgy. And from that moment on, we did a public reading. Was supposed to produce it somewhere in 2019-20, but then the pandemic hit. So then everything had been stalled up until 2022, which is now when we're presenting it at the Mai.
Oliver, tell me about where you grew up.
I grew up in a couple different places in Montreal, Montreal not earlier, and then went in a couple different apartment complexes until I landed at 5 years old in Roxborough, which was on the West Island. And then from that moment on, I was basically in and around the West Island area, went to Jean 23 High School in Dorval. And pretty much that was the good part of my childhood was in the West Island.
This is coming at such a prescient time because people are wrestling with, you know, why are we seeing so many outbursts of gun violence in Montreal? There's always a variety of factors. A lot of people point to the pandemic as being a cause in both Montreal and other places in Canada for the reason why there's been more shootings and more kind of conflicts. The timing is wild. I know you've been working on this for years.
Yes, I've been tracking the surge of violence actually for a while, and being myself, having encountered it myself growing up, it's always been in and around my neighborhood, around people, and sometimes some of my friends would come back to school with a split head or a black eye or certain things like that. So I was always intrigued to find out what was going on. Of course, I was trying to keep some distance to it. But as I grew up and started getting more serious about, you know, my career and everything, it was always like a lingering question in my mind. What is this violence? Where's it coming from? So when I started tracking the statistics, I started seeing it increase year after year after year, not only in Canada, like Toronto, the major cities, Vancouver, but also in Montreal. So when I started reading about it, I saw that it was all interrelated with youth gangs, some of the wars that are going on over territories. And what I found unfortunate was that a lot of those shootings, some of which are deadly, involve teenagers. Some of them are not even involved in gangs. They're just stray bullets from drive-bys that kind of go wrong. So with that in mind, I was trying to figure out what makes it that one good kid growing up in a neighborhood, maybe a little bit impoverished, what makes it that one good kid can get intertwined and do something as bad, as lethal, as walking around with a firearm and being pressured or pressed to go out and shoot at someone over some sort of different opinion of whatever it may be. Some of these kids are very impressionable. So when you get an adult to tell them what to do, usually they'll be the older kids getting their hands on weapons, and then they tell them, go do a shooting. You know, we have to think about it. How was I when I was 15 or 16? How impressionable was I? And then to start to try to understand what's going on through their mind and what resources could be extended to them so that they don't fall in those traps perpetually as it increases, as we are seeing firearms proliferate in Montreal.
That is the voice of Oliver Kumsatira, who is presenting Psycho 6. He wrote it. He's performing it at the Mai right now, a production from Tizri Dunia Theatre. So you're motivated by this question. You have a why. Why do we see these outbursts of violence? I think this is so interesting that it's both rooted in your personal experience, as you were saying, growing up, but also the research you've done. The thing is, too, though, is that data and numbers doesn't always tell us the whole story, and you've written a fictional account that's meant to be entertaining and also thought-provoking. So how, for you as a writer, do you walk that line between going to get actual data and backing to kind of cover what you're exploring, but you're also making a compelling story?
Right. It's a fine balance to strike. And that was actually much of our discussions at the beginning with Liz Valdez, our director for this piece, which is, yes, we're making a statement. Yes, we're trying to talk about a very tricky, urgent matter. However, we also understand that people are going to the theater, you know, they're going to sit there for an hour and a half, and they have to, you know, be engaged from the beginning to the end. And me coming from a background in theater and performance, I'm very aware that it's not a documentary. It's not an essay. It's not a PhD thesis. I'm writing a play. It's a show. So there's a fine balance between trying to get the message out, but theatricalizing it through the body, through choreography, through poignant text and dialogue, so that the scene actually lands in the person's heart and not so much in their mind and intellect. So we're basing ourselves on this background, all those factual things. Everything that I talk about is based on true events, not one story in particular, but based on what's going on in Canada and wherever else there's youth that are involved in gangs. So basically, it's striking that balance between the truth, but making it, amplifying it in a sense, so that it becomes like a very colorful picture, and that the people walk away with the emotion and maybe be curious to find out more, get interested in their kids' lives, or understand with a little bit more empathy what makes a young person turn to violence as a way to get to the resources they need to accomplish what they want, whether it's a dream or whether it's belonging, those emotional needs. So it was a fine balance, and that's why it took so long to get it right, which I think we did, because the feedback from the audience has been overwhelmingly positive so far.
It's so well said, Oliver. I'm also wondering for you why it's important for you to be the one to do this. Why is this a one-person show?
That's a good question. When we started writing it, it was part of a solo development program, and there's something very intimate about writing a solo, because you're talking to the audience almost as though they're your best friend, almost as though they're taking the role on of your scene partner in a sense. So there's a whole culture of how to write a solo, and it's very personal. It's not autobiographical for me, but it is very intimately linked to lived experiences. So as a first go at it, I really wanted to get a sense of how does it feel in my body, in my voice? What can I bring to the stage? Because first and foremost, I'm a performer. I was trained as an actor. I'm a dancer. So this is my tool. Writing for me was secondary in the sense that, yes, I've been writing raps for the last 15 years, but to write a play is quite a different endeavor. So I was really looking at it from the perspective of a performer. What's throughout the years, the 20 years I've been performing, I think works best to make the best show, the best performance, drawing from all those shows that I've done before, and then funneling it through my philosophy of what I believe makes a good show, and then me testing it out, not only because I think I have something new and fresh to bring to the table, but also to push myself as a performer, because I think that probably this would be the top three most difficult things I've ever done, the most challenging thing I've ever done. But that's how you grow, I think. So giving myself the opportunity to do that, I'm not saying that I'm going to perform this for the next 25 years, but I really wanted to feel what it was like to be on stage by yourself and really defend a piece for like an hour 15. And I really think that it's been such a growing experience for me.
It's so interesting to hear you talk in terms of like what is good for your personal development as an artist. But at the same time, I feel like the work that you've done, you've spent years looking at this topic, doing research, you know, using your own background. You feel like you're probably the best person to treat this material and present it to somebody.
I think that in a sense I am, in so far as it's a personal story. It's not autobiographical, like I said, but it's so, how can I say, it's so challenging in a sense to put yourself in this particular character's shoes. And we go really to dark places as well. So before I would delegate that to another actor performer within the very limited amount of time we had to put it up together, I would say that I wanted to test it on me, and as well, being an artist of color, sometimes you are limited by your casting, so you don't always get the opportunities that other white actors might have. So writing a piece for yourself, in a sense, is a way to make sure that your voice gets heard and that you get a work opportunity as well, because I won't sugarcoat it. It's not easy being an actor who is a person of color in this day and age at this moment. It's been improving tremendously, but when I graduated from theater school, it was very difficult to just get your foot in the door. So going back to 2012, this was kind of like the idea as well. It's like, all right, if I'm not going to get cast at this point, I might as well create an opportunity for myself.
That's so well said. Oliver Skumsatira is the writer and the performer of Psycho 6 on right now at the Mai. The final thing I wanted to ask you about is maybe where we should have actually have started, but I'm so interested in hearing more about your process and your thinking. Of course, let's talk about the main character, whose name is Kay, someone who's been in and out of foster care since a young age, 9. Tell me about how you started to develop him.
So, like I was saying, I was surrounded by a lot of people growing up, and Kay is to me a culmination of all those interesting people that I've come across. So the way I see him is that I grew up with a lot of people that had very difficult starts at life. Like I say in the play, in and out of foster homes, broken homes, single mother raising a child. Really the depths of darkness that we see or don't see, depending on which network we grow up in. But I saw that so many people around me had difficult goes at life, but yet they still hung on to something very important to them, that dream, that hope that they had. And sometimes it seemed disproportionate because you're like, you're dreaming way too big. You're never going to make it like that. You want to be this or that or rich or superstar, but you're broke. You're living in a cockroach-infested social housing program. Your school is completely broken down. People are breaking into your building. They're doing graffitis all over the walls and all those things. So all these people existed in my surrounding. And I guess in a way, I'm an observer. So I keep analyzing and really taking everything that I see around me as a sponge. And they just inhabit me for a while. And some of these kids that I grew up with, they were also very charismatic. And that was very important to me, that despite all the challenges they had, they were very, very excited about life. They were very thrill-seeking in a sense. They were very charming. And all those components and facets got integrated into the character as I was developing who this person might be that we're going to tell the story about. Not someone that's unidimensional, not all good, not all bad, but flawed. Really all those nuances, those gray zones. And I saw a lot of that growing up.
Have any of your friends had a chance to come see the show yet, or will they come see the show?
Yes, I had a lot of people come out, and they were very excited about it. Some of them were blown away, and they were it all hit them differently. That was what was interesting. You know, some people told me, oh, this reminds me of this person. This reminds me of that person. I can't believe that you were able to discuss it in such a way that we don't judge the character. We empathize for someone who's a criminal without sugarcoating what he does or saying that it's not like, not saying that it's right what he's doing, but we understand why someone could become a criminal, a thief, or get involved with gangs. We understand a little bit more that it's not as simple as good and evil. So yeah, that was fun.
Oliver, it sounds like you are having a lot of fun getting a chance to finally put this out on stage. I thank you so much for taking the time to take us behind the scenes of Psycho 6.
Thanks a lot for having me.
That was Oliver Kumsatira, who has written a new show called Psycho 6. It grapples with the rights of youth violence. Oliver performs his show until June 23rd at the Mai. It's a presentation by Teasry Dunia Theater, directed by Liz Valdez. For tickets and more information, visit teasrydunyatheater.com or call 514-848-0238. That's teesridunyatheater.com. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. We head back now to The Fringe to find out more about an otherworldly puppet show, Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers from the Great Unknown. It's a new production from Moon and Pom Pom Productions. Naomi Moon is one of the performers and creators, and they directed Tiny Stories. It has two more shows at The Fringe this weekend at Mission Santa Cruz. Naomi is an interdisciplinary artist and thinker. I spoke with them earlier this week. Welcome, Naomi, to Upstage. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've had a few performances of Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers from the Great Unknown. How is that going for you so far?
It's great. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of fun. I think they found a good synergy together. But there's tales that we can, you know, discover live in the process and be like, let's try it again differently the next time we do it. And one thing that's nice about working with this crew is the willingness to improvise and adapt. So if there was like a transition that we had a new image for, we're like, okay, let's try it with the clock doing this other thing. And we get to play live with the performance, which is really fun.
I really like this one line from the blurb for the show. The ancestors are free to have tea in the wrong timeline, which suggests that we're looking backwards. We're also kind of looking forwards. We're messing with time a little bit. It sounds ethereal. Can you tell me about the world that you're trying to create with Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers?
Yeah, it's I'm definitely conjuring a kind of non-linear multi-timeline narrative, non-narrative. It's a deep interest of mine for the past 3 years, how our ancestry deeply impacts us, whether we're conscious of it or not. And in some ways, I like to imagine these ancestors as being like physically present, making little choices right beside us. And the show plays with these ideas, and it's an opportunity to explore an image world that is related to what that might be like if we noticed it.
I'd love to know about the puppets. You're working with artists who are all multidisciplinary, so there's lots of different kinds of influences that are coming to roost here. But I love puppets and I want to hear about that. Tell me more.
So puppetry is an interesting discipline because it's the life of objects. It's very animist in itself, which is another one of the deep themes of this show. And so when things are coming alive, it's sometimes very obvious that there's like a There's an octopus creature that gets animated, and it's but what's coming alive the most is the shadow that's connected with it. Or if there is an object that has a life of its own, the way that might be demonstrated is might be very dancerly, or it might be very silly. It just depends on the scene. I don't know if that gives you a picture of how we use these things.
Absolutely. Would you like to describe to me one of your favorite puppets?
Okay, so I mean, one of my favorite, I don't even know, it's like it's in the realm of puppetry, but it's not really a puppet in the sense that it's like a structural, like almost like a sculpture, a living sculpture that is a home for these different ancestors to live in. And the texture of it is very beautiful, and the puppeteer that manipulates it has a really nice like movement quality when they lift it and float it. So there's, yeah. Does that connect you with some of the feeling that might be happening?
Absolutely. Naomi, you've referenced the ancestors as a touch point. One of the key phrases that I love from your blurb was, you know, allowing the ancestors are free to have tea in the wrong timeline. You brought it up again there a moment ago, and I was just curious to know about what that means to you, what that signifies in the production, connecting with ancestors. What does that mean?
So lineage comes with us in so many ways that we're conscious of and unconscious of. And giving those subconscious storylines a chance to live through the stage, to be visualized, and I think brings that awareness into the imagination more. For me, it's important because I think living in Canada, which is, you know, a colonized place, coming from immigrant parents and mixed race lineage, it's like, who are the people that brought me here, and what is their relationship with this land, and how do I make a right relationship on behalf of my ancestors, and what were they escaping from? So these questions are things that are really important to me to ask and to bring into my artwork.
Speaking with Naomi Moon, who is a creator, director, and performer in Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers from the Great Unknown, on now at the Fringe until Sunday. And Naomi, looking at the descriptions, the bios for all the people who are working with you in this particular piece, everyone is coming from such varied backgrounds. We have somebody who works with embroidery, somebody who grew up doing live chamber music and clowning in their native Mexico with their family. Another one of your performers is an arts school dropout, but also as a witch. Tell me about how you came to assemble this amazing cast and team.
Yeah, I mean, it's very important to me to live a multidisciplinary life, and being in Montreal, that's available. The communities that emerge are often drawing a really wide variety of people and practitioners, and one of the most interesting things about art making for me is the interdisciplinary, the kind of meta art that happens when you merge different kinds of disciplines together and learn how they speak for each other when they layer on top of each other. So it's like crucial to me to find people that are doing a diversity of things and how that informs their practice and what that brings to the stage. When a dancer also knows what it's like to dance through objects, or when a poet knows what it's like to convey thoughts through rhythm, or, you know, these different ways that we can make a multisensory world, a kind of synesthetic art world happen.
I assume it must be so interesting when you're in rehearsal and you're in discussions, because everybody's bringing such a different perspective to the task at hand.
Yeah. And they're, well, is that true? Are they doing, there's a lot of similarity between us. Like, all being multidisciplinary, we have a way of communicating between disciplines that works well. And I think the defining quality is actually that everyone's pretty hilarious.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good humor, and yeah, the creativity that's present. I feel very honored to work with such a talented and interesting team of people.
You mentioned synesthesia there just a moment ago. It's such an evocative word. It's like when you have some people have certain they might see a color or feel or smell something when they hear a song, for example. Their senses get crossed. And I'm wondering what kind of experience you hope overall your audience gets while they sit through the play.
Yeah, I think you caught my deeper motive. I definitely hope to create that type of blending of sensation for people, because I think that's actually how humans experience things on a subconscious level. And I think that's where the imagination is the most active. I think that's the motivation for me, and is to connect the audience with their imagination in an embodied sense. So the imagination that lives through sound and color, that's why I want it to be a poem-like experience. Because poems are often blending the sensations in their description of life.
I love that use of the word poem-like, because it makes me feel like we're not going to walk in and get the kind of typical experience that we get from a production, even one that is like, you know, dance, where there's not necessarily a structure to it. Like, you're really trying to evoke a feeling more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this is how I take life in, is in these little glimpses of a scene or a pause with a beautiful soundscape that I might be walking through. And so, because this is what I appreciate in life, it's what I want to give back as an artist.
What is something that people might not expect about working with puppets? Like a challenge that may not be obviously to your audience, but is something that's going on behind the scenes, the challenge of working with puppets?
There's quite a few. Kind of ease of body posture, remembering mm-hmm. to breathe is pretty crucial. And then that the puppet or the like object that's about to be animated has a life of its own. And so there's a need to be able to work with improvisation while also being skillful at manipulating in a direction. Specifically, this group of people I brought together because they're really talented improvisers. So I really like to be with people that can take the structure of a movement and then like breathe something present into it. And puppetry is a really good place for that, because the object and the material does have a life of its own. So you have to respect it and have a good relationship with it.
Naomi, it's been so fun to get to know you and to find out more about Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was Naomi Moon, creator and performer of Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers from the Great Unknown. The multidisciplinary puppet show has two more performances Saturday and Sunday at Mission Santa Cruz. Follow them at Tiny Stories and Strange Prayers on Instagram. Tickets at 514-849-FEST and at montrealfringe.ca. Tableau d'Hote Theater shifted to free outdoor performances during the pandemic, setting up a serial show called En Pointe in Pointe St. Charles, which tracked the lives of ordinary people. And then they put on a very brave show called La Vie en Pink, a dance performance involving really wild costumes set in front of old silos. Really creative stuff, all outdoors, all free. Now the company returns with an entirely new concept that will take the audience on a boat crawling through 9 kilometers of the Lachine Canal, starting from Griffintown all the way to Villemard. Nearly 100 artists and community members will be performing vignettes along the way, spanning genres including music, dance, circus, and theater. And this is happening over the course of 6 free shows this weekend. It's called Voyage, and it's the brainchild of Tableau d'Hote artistic director Mathieu Murphy-Perron. I spoke with Mathieu yesterday. So why don't we just start with like where the idea come to set up a theater show along the canal?
I don't know. My brain does weird things at times. Essentially, the Conseil des Arts de Montréal has a program that supports one larger project in a borough every year on a rotating basis. So this past fall, the Sud-Ouest, the borough that I am based out of and the Tableau d'Hote has been working almost exclusively out of over the past few years since the pandemic, it was their turn. And so they called me and they're like, hey, do you want to apply for this? Because it has to be artists or collectives that work in the borough. And, you know, of course, instinctively, I just thought I could do a third season of En Pointe. I think it falls within what they were looking for quite well. But I didn't want to do that, even though we're still doing a third season of En Pointe. But I didn't want to do that because it felt very Pointe St. Charles specific, right? And when I think of the borough of the Sud-Ouest, it's not just Pointe St. Charles, it's St. Henry, it's Little Burgundy, it's Griffintown, it's Villemar, it's, you know, Côte Saint-Paul. And so I started thinking, what connects all 6 of these neighborhoods in the borough of the Sud-Ouest? And the answer came quite clearly. It is literally the Lachine Canal, right? And that's why the canal exists, to connect these places. And a number of years ago, I had seen some videos of a very cool project that happened in Germany, whereby these artists recruited villagers along a 30-kilometer train ride and created short snippets that audience members could see as the train zipped by. So all of these scenes were like 5 seconds, right? And I always thought that was really fascinating, and I wish I could have seen it. And I thought, why can't I try something like that on the canal? Obviously, it'll be on a boat. It'll be slower. It's a less big of a distance, but you know, I've been biking and walking this 9 kilometers between our start point and our end point many times over the past 7 or 8 months. So it's still a distance. It's still a distance, especially when you consider that you have to get various equipment and props and costumes to the 100 performers spread out across those 9 kilometers. But yeah, that's how it came to be, and it's an experiment. We'll see what it does. It's a thing.
It's so fun to take risks, right? You put so much into it. You don't know how it's going to go, but you're trying something bold. I can't remember the last time I saw theater from a boat or watched something on a boat far away. And this has kind of become your wheelhouse, is doing outdoor productions over the course of the pandemic. So are there any skills that are like translatable from On Point and your earlier show, La Vie en Pink? Sorry, La Vie en Pink.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain degree, right? We've been working a lot on being as autonomous as we can be energy-wise, right? Because a lot of times when you're doing shows outdoors, you don't have easy access to energy, to outlets, to electricity. You don't necessarily want to rent giant, like, loud generators. So we've gotten quite good at doing that for On Point, but On Point is in one location. Over here, we have about 30 vignettes spread out over 9 kilometers. And, you know, that's proving to be a challenge. One of the challenges that I still haven't entirely figured out is I finally got my sound needs a few days ago, because we have different coordinators for every medium. So somebody's taking care of circus, somebody's taking care of music, somebody's taking care of dance, and I'm taking care of the few theater numbers. And I got the sound needs from everyone. It's like, oh, I don't think there are that many autonomous battery-powered speakers available for rent in the city. So that's a challenge, but you're sourcing where you can. You're doing what you can. You know that you got to deal with unpredictable factors and roll with the punches. So,
absolutely. That is the voice of Mathieu Murphy-Perron, who is the artistic director of Table d'Hôte Theatre, getting ready to present Voyage this weekend, a kind of first ever production, a show happening on a boat over 9 kilometers of the Lachine Canal. So you mentioned vignettes. I'm wondering, is there a unified story that's happening or a theme, or is everything quite separate? And so I'm just trying to picture this first, actually. Let's just imagine. So you're on the boat, and as you're going along, you'll see something different as you pass through.
Yep, exactly. So as you're drifting along the canal, either looking to your left or looking to your right or looking straight ahead of you, because some of the vignettes are on water as well, you will see these different 15 to 30 second vignettes. We think 15 to 30 seconds because, to be completely honest, the first time that we're going to do it with the boat is on Saturday. So we'll see what the boat speed is at. And if the boat is slower than we think, maybe some of those vignettes will get stretched a little bit. But we're predicting 15 to 30 seconds, and the boat people seem to think that that's an accurate prediction as well.
Okay.
We definitely wanted to try to come up with a universal theme, and we have some that we've identified for ourselves. But we also didn't want it to be too limiting, right? And we wanted to let the artists that are at each vignette have a certain amount of creative autonomy. So we're rooted in place, in history, in relationships to Earth and the people who built it. And you know, everywhere we can, finding a little joy. That has also come through from On Point and La Vie en Pink.
You're not only doing theater here, but as you mentioned, there's going to be circus, there's going to be music, dance as well. So just a whole different, like, there's something for everybody. I'm just imagining, with like about 100 performers, you've had to do a tremendous amount of outreach to bring people into your net here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the goals of the project, from the funder's perspective, but also for me, was to allow community members the opportunity to work with professional artists. Most of the vignettes are very technically challenging and should 100% be done by professionals, but some other vignettes can very much be done by folks who don't have any artistic experience. I have to say, it's been a little bit difficult, the community outreach in that regard. The train show, that's all it was. We weren't working with professionals at all. It was all community members. I don't know if it's because it was just like one train ride a weekend over an entire summer, that made that possible and people could come and go. But over here, I think a lot of community members, when I say, all right, if you want to do a vignette, you have to be available all weekend, they go, I don't know. So that's been a little tricky.
Yeah, I would imagine. I'm sure you're learning a lot as well, so that if you ever remount something like this or on this scale, you'll have learned a lot of things about, you know, it's not just the technical aspect, but the human aspect, getting people involved. One of the organizations you're working with is the Point St. Charles Art School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Point St. Charles Art School have been a bit of a community hub for us. So the different vignettes require different artistic pieces, be they, you know, masks and costumes and other grandiose things. And there are some great teachers and artists involved in the Point St. Charles Art School. So they put out calls for community members who wanted to be part of building. We had these community build days where people would build like beaver masks and beaver tails and stuff like that. So that's how they helped us out.
That is Mathieu Murphy-Parent, who is the artistic director of Table d'Hôte Theatre, getting ready to present something I've never heard of before, Voyage, a boat ride that is also a theatre performance. I'm wondering for you, will you be on the boat or on the sidelines? Like, is it even possible to be on the sidelines for a production like this?
I mean, somebody can bike along. I will definitely follow, be on the boat for the first performance. Otherwise, I think I will give up my seat so that folks can enjoy it and the maximum number of people can watch. And I will do my best to bike along. And I think I can bike faster than that boat. So,
yeah. Tell me about the boat, actually.
It's a small boat by Navarque. Navarque are the same company that are in charge of all the navettes fluviales that bring people from the South Shore to the Old Port all summer. It's a boat that they made just for the canal. Because the canal, you know, that was another one of the challenges. When we started walking in the winter, there was no water. Right. So when I was looking at the distance of the bridges, I was like, wow, there's so much space. I can get a giant ass boat. And then as the water started filling up, I was like, oh, wait, no, the boat has to be quite small. So it's only a 40 person boat, but that's fine. Even if there's only 40 people who come per performance, other audience members or other people who are just walking along the canal will be able to witness a vignette here, a vignette there. They won't necessarily see all 30 of them, but they'll be able to take part in those small little moments of joy.
I'm also imagining that this is going to be a great advertisement for the company itself, because obviously it's not just the people who are going to be on the boat that'll see these little performances. Like, it's almost like I wish you could flyer at every stop, which I know doesn't really sound doable, but people are going to see a boat going along and it's like, this is Table d'Hôte. It's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Wow. This is such a weird world, Sarah.
What's up?
I mean, sorry. This is not a like, so I'm on TikTok now. And like, whatever, I have like some followers or something, but like people recognize me. So there's just been this guy staring at me for the last little while. I was like, I don't know who you are. I've seen you at a protest. And he clearly wanted to talk to me, but he was getting impatient because we're in this interview. And so he just yelled, I just wanted to say your TikToks are dope. And then he kept writing.
It's like the third. What are your TikToks about?
Usually about how much I hate cars.
But, okay, you know, fair. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll also be making a little vignette for your own show at some point. That might be an interesting tool for promotionals.
It's been actually that is the thing. Some of the artists involved are TikTok people. There's a bunch of puppets and big masks that will be in the show. And that happened because I made a connection with a TikTok artist who's based out of Montreal, who I'm shocked isn't involved in the theater community because his work is extraordinary. Other people who have gotten involved in some of the community stuff, some person, a seamstress. These are all people who are hearing about the project through TikTok and who want to be involved. So that's been a nice gathering point.
It might be an untapped resource for a lot of companies to put the word out, but also find new collaborators.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Mathieu, it's always good to check in with you. I'm really excited for your maiden voyage of Voyage and keep up the amazing work.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Mathieu Murphy-Parent, Artistic Director of Table d'Hôte Theatre. They present their new show, Voyage, this weekend, a 9-kilometer boat ride down the Lachine Canal between Griffintown and Villemarde. 3 performances daily, Saturday and Sunday at 1, 3:30, and 6 p.m. Each show is about an hour long. Boarding is at Quai de la Commune. Tickets are free, but they must be reserved in advance. Table d'Hôte.ca, TableAudhot.ca. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard my guests, Eric Cooper on his solo show at The Fringe, Mr. Coffeehead, Naomi Moon of Tiny Stories, and Strange Prayers from The Great Unknown. Both shows are on at Misha Santa Cruz this weekend as part of The Fringe. Oliver Comsatira starring in his solo performance Psycho 6 at the May, and Mathieu Murphy-Perron launching new show Voyage with Table d'Hôte Theatre at the Lachine Canal this weekend. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Soler, spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and ckut.ca. Happy fringing. Visit the Quebec Drama Fed if you want to take part in their Fringe Bingo draw this Saturday. Stay safe and have fun. Up next is Grey Matters.
June 16th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture by David Corton entitled Our Planetary Existential Crisis. It was recorded in Kirkland, Washington in May of this year. Our planet and humankind are in danger. The warnings coming from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres could not be more unambiguous. He says we are heading toward an unlivable world. We are on a fast track to climate disaster, major cities underwater, unprecedented heat waves, terrifying storms, widespread water shortages, the extinction of a million species of plants and animals. This is not fiction or exaggeration, he continues. It is what science tells us will result from our current energy policies. We are on a pathway to global warming of more than double the 1.5 degree limit agreed in Paris. If you care about justice and our children's future, I'm appealing directly to you. Climate promises and plans must be turned into reality and action now. It is time to stop burning our planet and start investing in the abundant renewable energy all around us. The speaker tonight is David Corton. He's a philosopher and visionary. For several decades, he was an insider in the development establishment. He has worked for the Ford Foundation, USAID, and taught at Harvard Graduate School of Business. Having severed his ties to the past, today he is a leading voice for economic and social justice. He is a co-founder of Yes Magazine and author of When Corporations Rule the World, The Great Turning,